having a relationship with the guys at Audio Marketing and Musical Fidelity. They are kind enough to lend us an A1, which we can set up with their bookshelves, which sounds just fantastic.
I bet it does. Mm. I actually haven't heard the new A1, but does it kind of sound beautiful and sweet and warm like the original, is it?
It's definitely warm. It's a hot amplifier.
And welcome back to Not an Audiophile. This is episode 25, season 2. I'm fresh back from the 2025 Australian Hi-Fi Show in Sydney, and today is the first of a series of episodes of the various interviews that I managed to record with a whole bunch of interesting people. First up today, Brian Rogers from Richter. This episode of Not an Audiophile, the podcast, is sponsored by Spectra Flora. Looking for gorgeous speakers that sound as good as they look? Meet Spectra Flora, Australia's newest loudspeaker innovator. Their flagship Solata 88 is handcrafted in Victoria, Australia. With patent-pending waveguide and subwoofer designs, this speaker delivers impactful, dynamic, and emotionally gripping sound. Listeners rave about the beauty and breathtaking sound of the Solata 88 that makes ordinary speakers feel lifeless. Experience Spectra Flora. Rediscover meaning in music. Learn more at spectraflora.com.
So we're here with Brian Rogers at Richter, and it's a pleasure. Thank you, Brian.
Here we are.
Here we are.
Another city.
Another
dusty hotel room. Another hi-fi show.
I think it's fairly clean, actually. I think the cleaners are really good here, actually. But you got a hell of an array. What you seem to do at shows is you bring a simple range of equipment, but there's always something new. At least one, in this case, I see a little modern-day A1 Musical Fidelity, which is obviously not what you sell, but...
No.
Why is that here?
Look, I... If you look at the M6 SI,
yes,
that's my own amp.
Yeah, okay.
So it's not a loner. It's an amp I like to use. It's got the power when required to develop the larger speakers. It's just a really nice performing product at a sensible price.
It is. I mean, it's probably a good match for Richter, isn't it?
It's a good match. Yeah. And having a relationship with the guys at Audio Marketing and Musical Fidelity, they are kind enough to. Lend us an A1, which we can set up with their bookshelves, which sounds just fantastic.
I bet it does. Mm. I actually haven't heard the new A1, but does it kind of sound beautiful and sweet and warm like the original, is it?
It's definitely warm. It's a hot amplifier. Look, it really sounds nice. I used it in the Melbourne show as well, and It really, really did well with the Merlins and the Harlequins.
So do you have something new in Richter at this show, or are you more newish?
Newish. We have the larger speaker here, which is the prototype Dragon.
Okay.
Now, we haven't had a Dragon for nearly a decade.
Wow, okay.
And the reason for that is we just didn't know. We don't churn speakers out for the sake of churning speakers out.
Every model has a place, I guess, doesn't it?
It has to have a reason for being there. And we just weren't quite sure what a Dragon should be.
Mm-hmm.
But after doing the Excalibur in the previous Series 6 SE range, that gave us a lot of ideas how do we bring a Dragon in. And this is a prototype of the dual chamber unit.
Yeah, I see there's quite a displacement between the two.
Yeah.
Well, I guess they're... Well, three bass mids, but what's going on there? Because they're... It's a complex design by the looks of it.
Yeah, it is. It's a big crossover.
Mm-hmm.
We've got the dedicated bass driver that we've used for the Excalibur.
Okay.
In its own bass chamber at the bottom. So while the driver looks the same, it's a larger voice coil.
Oh, okay.
Much greater excursion.
Same cone and surround, but behind the scenes.
Same cone and surround. It's a totally different animal. Yeah, double magnet motor.
Wow.
Heavy cast alloy basket. It's a good bass driver. We use two of them in the Excalibur,
yeah,
and we use one of them in the Dragon in its own chamber, which is rear ported separately.
So the Excalibur is the top of the range.
It's the top of the range. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So the Dragon is designed to sit in between the new Excalibur and the new Wizard coming in what we call the Series 7 Special Edition range, which is it's well developed at this stage.
Okay.
Yeah.
You seem to be constantly, you know, pushing the boundaries with the assistance of your guru designer,
Dr. Martin Gosnell. He's brilliant. You know, and we really enjoy what we're doing together. He's been engineering the Richter sound for well over 25 years. He's been the one constant.
Well, actually, and I remember I went to a product release for Richter about that year, about that long ago. And that was his first series that he'd done. I mean, that is a long time ago. I mean, that is, I guess it was the mid-90s or something.
We don't like to think that back.
Actually, we shouldn't say the mid-90s because that would be 30 years ago. Yeah. So it wasn't that long ago. Maybe it was the late 90s. Yeah. But, so he is been responsible for largely everything in the last...
He's been responsible for the engineering of every speaker since Ralph Waters.
Yeah, okay.
Wow. So, you know, Ralph, you know, established the business. But Martin took over when Ralph stepped out, as far as an engineer goes.
Yes, yeah.
And that is well over 25 years. So, I mean, the brand is near 40 years old. Next year, it's 40 years old.
Yeah.
Not many Australian brands have lasted that long.
Well, that almost brings me to my next thought, which is Richter is, I guess... I mean, Richter and Crix.
Yeah.
But I mean, Crix say they've been going for 50 years.
Yeah.
They're listening, of course.
Well, technically, I've been going for over 60.
Well, I mean, I have a sneaking suspicion that Scott's first speaker was built as a child, as mine was, successfully or otherwise, on the kitchen table, and he's including that. But, and Ralph may have built his first pair of speakers on the kitchen table, I'm not sure, but... he probably mentioned it in episode XYZ that we have, but I can't remember what episode it was. Yeah. But for those listening, Ralph Waters, the founder of Richter Acoustics, is interviewed on Not an Audiophile podcast earlier in our series, season one. Back to current day Richter. They're such great value for money. I think that's they always were. Ralph's speakers were great value for money. He was very conscious of that, and you've continued with Martin that tradition, I feel.
I like a lot of Ralph's philosophy, and really, we aspire to the same sort of claims. You know, we're not an audiophile. We're not in the hi-fi industry. We're in the entertainment business.
Absolutely, yeah.
And we want to leave people, you know, excited, you know, engaged. We want to leave people, when people are sitting down listening to our product, looking for the next track to play it's 2 a.m.
Yes,
shit,
you know? Yes. Yeah.
And that's actually where Martin and I end up quite often.
We'll
be sitting, listening, tweaking, designing, and, you know, it's 2 a.m. because we're just having such a hoot of a time. And if that's not happening, then why are you doing it?
Oh, yeah.
So, but you look... One thing that irks me about our industry, and I'm not sure at what point it became the domain of the uber rich and wealthy. You know, you can buy a damn good hi-fi system for not a lot of money, which is very enjoyable, but we seem to focus too much on the $10, $20, $30, $100,000 speakers.
Yes.
Then you need an amplifier. Then you need a source. And suddenly, you know, you're divorced and... you're living in an apartment on your own listening to a...
I think if you hang around hi-fi shows too much, certainly you would start to think that an average stereo is $250,000.
Yeah.
It's certainly not the case. There's so much good...
Maybe that's why people aren't going to hi-fi stores anymore, because of the perception.
Well, maybe that is it, that you have to spend a hell of a lot of money. And and I, in my retailing career, was always focused on value and tended to sell... middling price range products that offered exceptional performance, and I did sell a little bit of Richter way back in the day, I mean, people perhaps don't realise how affordable your loudspeakers are. I don't want to turn this into an ad, but I mean is it the little Merlin? Oh, free ad is good. The little speakers, which I believe are Merlins.
Yeah.
the bookshelf, the stand mounts, or they're actually more of a bookshelf. They're not a big loudspeaker. They would go on a bookshelf.
You look at any of our products, they are built stupidly well for the price. You compare them to any competitor at our price bracket or more, our build quality will be way better. You check the crossover build quality, way better.
Yeah. I have seen pictures of crossovers on your Instagram, what have you, and they look, from my technical eye, they are made from very good quality components, considering that that loudspeaker is $1,500?
Well, in current climate, the Merlin S6 Plus is now $1,399. And it's just been awarded by Sound & Image stand mount speaker of the year below $2,500.
Well, there you go.
So bang for buck.
Yep.
It ticks all the boxes. It's a great speaker. It really is a great speaker.
I think it's a decent point to make that an affordable streamer, a good one.
Yep.
Blue Sound or something.
I'm using the Node Icon.
Okay, so it is a Blue Sound product.
That's the new Icon. I've purchased one myself.
Yeah. Yep.
So you can put together, let's take that Musical Fidelity amp.
Okay.
It's $5,000.
Yes,
the Blue M6. Blue Sound Streamer, round figures, $1,900.
Yes.
If you take the floor standing speakers there, the Wizard S6 Plus, which last year took out floor standing speaker of the year below $10,000, and they retail for $3,000.
Okay.
So for $10,000, you can buy a very good floor standing speaker, the Musical Fidelity amp, the Node Icon Streamer, and you will be very, very happy.
And stunned with the sound quality. What's the price of that? Is
about $10,000.
Yeah, about $10,000.
Figures about $10,000. Yeah. So that's a damn good hi-fi system.
That is, and I would take that a step further and say that you could buy a very good integrated amplifier with perhaps streaming built into it and those speakers and be spending $6,000 and $7,000.
Yep, absolutely.
Or you could take it a step further and buy the Merlins with a little NAD or a Rotel or a something that for around $1,000 and play some CDs or records through
absolutely.
For $500 to $1,000 and have a $3,000 or $4,000 system that sounded amazing. So
absolutely.
So really good hi-fi doesn't indeed have to cost. In fact, good hi-fi costs marginally more than rubbish hi-fi.
Good hi-fi shouldn't be a scary thing to think about when it comes to an investment. As you said, the Merlin, a lot of Merlin bookshelf speakers have been sold with products like the Paranode Edge.
That's
a little 40-watt aside streamer.
And
you are talking, $2,000 to $3,000 as a setup.
For a whole stereo.
And it's for an apartment.
Yeah, it's all you need.
It's great.
It's where you can start. It's ultimately maybe you want more, but it delivers beautiful music.
But it's affordable entry.
Yes.
It's where you start.
No, I agree wholeheartedly my point from a technical person's standpoint is that that's a good quality combination. It sounds great. It's quite well made.
Yeah.
And if you spend a bit less than that, you get utter rubbish, unfortunately. So you've got to spend a little bit of money to get something that's going to last, that sounds great.
Yeah.
Probably JB Hi-Fi, without probably mentioning a retailer's name, but I just did.
Yeah.
Not a good place to go and buy hi-fi, because there actually is no hi-fi in there.
Get a good kettle, though. Get a good toaster these days.
Yes, and they do a nice line in washing machines. I would step sideways to any good specialist retailer, because not only will they sell Richter, but they actually will probably have a nice, a value for money, sensible choice to power them. Would you say?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, you know your retail as well, and you've actually got many of them.
Absolutely. Look, these days a lot of people, we promote or try and suggest to people that a nice, modest streaming amp or amplifier with HDMI ARC and the Merlin bookshelf speakers is a great alternative to a soundbar. Nobody sits down and listens to a soundbar.
No.
Right?
Well, you wouldn't.
Nobody.
Not for long, anyhow.
Yeah. So, but here you've got a great hi-fi system that you will sit down, listen, and enjoy, and my idea is that, people come and listen to music, they come to a dinner party, you're listening to music, but then it turns into a dance party because they love what they're listening to. Why would anyone buy a soundbar if you want to listen to music?
So you're in this business because of music, really?
Oh, yeah. I mean, look, always trying to make the product better. Because we're in direct contact with our consumers, we take comments on board.
Mm-hmm.
When we develop a product, you know, those products are in the back of the car. I'm out around retailers, they're in store. We're listing, testing, trying it on different equipment. Every room is different. So we're trying to build a product that's going to sound better than anything else in most situations.
Yes. Yeah.
Whereas you'll find one speaker from another brand will sound great like this.
Yes.
But then
in the wrong space,
it sounds terrible.
Yeah. Well, what they say is the wrong space.
Correct. Correct.
I'm not sure if it was you that said this, but a few people do, I guess, is that it's it's something about it's not the... Now I've blown it because I can't think of the same, but it's about the excuses that people use for why the systems are not. It's always the room, of course.
Yes, yes.
But in reality, rooms are rooms are rooms. You've, you know, the better the equipment, no matter the room, it will sound better. So
you know the great thing.
A good balance of a good. I mean, full stop. A good balanced, a well balanced loudspeaker design will work better in most rooms.
The good thing about a hi-fi show is it's a level playing field. We're all got the same cardboard box to deal with, right? But some people will bitch and moan till the sun comes up, you know, to the end of the day that, oh, well, it's the room, I can't get it right.
Good.
And they'll have so much room treatment in the room and it still sounds crap.
Yeah, yeah.
If you look around here, the room treatment is absolutely minimal.
Well, I actually... Oh, I see you brought one foam quasi-absorber diffuser thing sitting over in the... Oh, there's four,
there's,
isn't there?
There's
well
four.
Disguised. Oh, there's some behind a banner. Yeah, there is no room treatment at all in here, really.
Because, you know, most people can't put room treatments in their lounge room. Firstly, it's going to annoy somebody else. So, you know, your speaker's got to sound good in environments that people live in. And that's how we design our product.
I absolutely wholeheartedly agree. Yeah, yeah. There's actually, there is a trend a little bit towards treating your room at the moment, but the reality is that in almost all cases, it will be in a specialised listening space because the other half of that family, if it's only half, will almost certainly not give the tick of approval for the array of quadratic diffusers that you'd like to put on each sidewall.
Correct.
You better buy something that works in what you've got.
Well, maybe start with better product in the first place and minimise the requirement of room treatment.
You keep saying that. That's true. I mean, you've got, and there's an obvious step up through the range. So if you start off with Merlins, you may well be drawn into the one of the floor standing models, which produces quite a greater sense of scale and plays a little louder if you need that sort of thing. Greater bass extension and slightly higher levels of overall smoothness and fidelity, I guess, which is partly because it's a bigger box and more drivers, but partly because your budget's freed up a little bit, I guess.
Well, I mean, look, I don't have it here, but the next speaker up from the Merlin is the Harlequin.
Yes.
So if you were going to buy the Merlin and put them on stands, seriously consider the Harlequin because it's
So a decent stand costs money. Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah.
So going from $13.99 to $22.99 for a floor standing Harlequin takes up no more space than a Merlin on a stand, and you get a better speaker.
Would you indulge us as to what is perhaps the best selling model in the range?
Merlin and Wizard.
Merlin and Wizard.
Yeah, the two hero products that are here.
Ben, please.
Ben, please. Thank you very much.
See, this is a real hi-fi show.
It is a hi-fi show. They're emptying the rubbish bin. they are our hero products. There's no question about that.
Right,
the Merlin is... Look, when I went and developed the Series 6 Merlin, I was rolling two bookshelf speakers into one.
Mm-hmm.
So I was rolling a small Mark V with a 5-inch driver and a Mark V with a 6-inch driver into one speaker.
Okay.
So I wanted a speaker that was small, but outperformed the bigger version of that Mark V.
Yep.
And, you know, this speaker is the same height as what the 5-inch driver Merlin was in the Mark V range.
Yes.
And that's, you know, generally if it's going on a stand or on a bookshelf, height's critical.
Yes, yes.
Depth, not so much. Width, not so much.
No,
but height is critical.
Yeah.
So that will fit nicely inside an IKEA Kallax bookshelf.
Conveniently.
It'll only 32 centimetres high.
Yeah, okay.
And this, you know, if it needs to, it goes well.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, no, good sense of scale for a smaller loudspeaker, absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay. thank you, Brian, for your time.
That's all right.
And giving us a general wrap-up on the range. And, yeah. I mean, the brand continues, obviously.
Brand continues, and we're constantly pushing the envelope and seeing what we can do,
yep,
how we can improve. I mean, I think Ralph might have actually said it, but, you know, a speaker designer can never be happy.
Well, no.
Because you're always looking.
Your latest baby is always the best, right?
The latest baby is always the best. But, you know, you also have to know when to bring something to marketplace and then when to continue moving on to what will be in the next model.
Yeah.
But, you know, this is, you know, Series 6 Plus is... That's, you know, they are stunning products for the value, no question.
No, certainly they need to be listened to. And this episode goes out slightly after the show, so no one's going to hear this and come to the show. But you have retailers over the country, and I guess you go to other shows, do you?
Oh, look, we normally do them. Well, there's only two shows in Australia, which is the Sydney Stereo Net Show.
Mm-hmm. Sydney Stereo Net Show.
The Sydney. Have I had a drink yet?
Considering it's...
Let's try that again.
Take two.
Ooh. Do you know something I don't know? Let's start that again. The Melbourne Stereo Net Show in August, we'll be there. And, you know, fingers crossed, we may have the first run of the three Series 7 special edition models available for initial auditioning. So that's actually...
That's exciting.
That's what we're working to at the moment. And again, these will be products Richter's never built before.
Okay.
Really, again, the Dragon, the Wizard, the Excalibur, all done in a natural oak walnut veneer, real walnut veneer.
Oh, hang on, really?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, and it's, well, actually the same as this here.
Yeah, right.
This is a prototype.
Yeah, okay.
Returning to a slightly curved cabinet.
Okay.
And, you know, we're moving away from black. So, you know, the baffles won't be black.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay, all right.
So we want to make the product a little more lounge room friendly.
All right.
Rather than, you know, there's a big black box in my lounge
room. They're simply designed, but they're very elegant and neatly designed and nicely proportioned, I think.
Hmm.
But, okay, so you're elevating the...
pushing the
aesthetic a little bit. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Oh, well, that's interesting. And, of course, the Melbourne show, not that we're here to promote necessarily their show either, but they, my understanding is it's on earlier this year.
It's earlier August, so that way we won't get hit with the Melbourne Marathon.
There was people running past the show last
correct,
year. Yes,
correct.
Yes.
So, and of course it's slightly cooler weather as well, so.
Yeah, good time to be inside and looking and listening to hi-fi.
Yeah.
Okay, hey, thanks Brian Rogers.
That's all right.
A pleasure, and we'll speak again.
Sounds good. Thanks, Andrew.
No worries. Pleasure. Bye.
Are you looking for your tribe? Visit stereonet.com today to join one of the world's largest online communities for hi-fi, home cinema, headphones, and much more. Read the latest news and product reviews or check out the classifiers for the largest range of gear on sale. Membership is absolutely free, so visit stereonet.com and join up today.
Oh, we're here with Jeff from Hey Now Hi-Fi. And perhaps the first question I could ask is, why is it Hey Now Hi-Fi?
It's actually a...
Because I was just walking past and I met Jeff in the hall. How's that going? He was telling me just the other day or something anyhow. Yeah, Hey Now Hi-Fi, how did that... Are you a fan of the Larry Sanders Show?
No, it's actually just really, really simple. It's a combination of my last name and my partner's last name.
Oh, there you go. Wow, yeah. Okay, yeah.
It just came to me in the middle of the night and...
Well, it kind of works, yeah.
It does, and it's like, that sounds pretty cool.
It's memorable, yes, yeah. So you're here at Sydney Hi-Fi Show or Australian Hi-Fi Show or the whatever this show is called. What is it called?
For me, it's the Sydney Hi-Fi Show.
It's the Sydney Hi-Fi Show.
Because I had to drive 1,000 kilometres to get here.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You've got some interesting equipment on display. Obviously, the Diamond Turntable, which is, and that's a Helix 1, is it?
Helix 2.
Oh, it is a Helix 2.
Helix 2 Mark 3. It was Hi-Fi Plus's choice of turntable of the year, price no object.
Wow, okay.
Yeah.
Hi-Fi Plus.
Hi-Fi
They're
Plus.
They're quite a discerning journal, really, aren't they?
They are, yeah.
They don't just give prizes away.
No.
No. Yeah, okay. I mean, it's a magnificent piece of machinery. I just listened to it and it sounded... I mean, the horns sounded like horns.
I just think it looks classic as well. A nice 40-60 split of it. It just looks great.
Well, it gets right away from the blingy Euro chrome look of so many European turntables. Continental Europe, the English are probably slightly more reserved, but it appeals to me, and of course the fact that it's made in Australia is, I mean, we go on and on about it, and obviously we introduced and interviewed him a couple of episodes ago, and he regaled us with all sorts of tales, but perhaps most importantly for those that have not heard that episode, lots of useful information about how to set up or the important aspects of any turntable system.
But, absolutely, yeah, he's such a knowledgeable person.
Yeah. I mean, he's clearly addicted to it and has been for 40 years. And
I've been a part of this project for 9 years, I think.
Is that right?
Yeah, okay. I've watched it develop from the original Helix machines that, you know, he built himself with
pre-production prototypes.
Pre-production, all the way through. So I feel very honoured that I can display and present this.
It's quite a story, isn't it, really? Yeah.
It's actually the third one I've had since the last Hi-Fi show.
Yeah, that's a pretty solid effort. so you're turning them over.
Yeah.
It's, if you like you said, Hi-Fi Plus?
Hi-Fi Plus, yeah.
Yeah, greatest turntable in the world. You've got some other amazing gear, Airtight tube amplifier, which is actually surprisingly affordable.
Yeah, it is, yeah. It's Japanese made. It's made by the people who, their father was Luxman, like proper old Luxman.
Okay, when you say their father, you mean like by blood, by family? Yeah.
And then when that went, wherever it went.
Haywire.
Yeah, this Airtight brand started.
Yeah, okay.
And this here is an ATM-1E 2024.
Yeah, okay.
It's the first time that they've changed any element of it since 1986.
I guess advances in tube design are limited in a way, but I mean, transformer technology, insulating properties, core materials or something? Yeah, that's what's changed. Okay. Yeah, right.
And so when you live through the idea of model number 1, 2, 3, Mark 1, Mark 2, you know, all these things that just keep on bringing out new product.
Yeah.
When it's a classic, it's always a classic.
Yes, it looks classical. We know it's well made. It's a great brand. Surprisingly affordable. It's less than $200,000. No, it's actually, what is it, 20 grand or something?
20? 18.
18. It's $18,000. It's bizarre.
Yeah.
Yeah, just, I guess they haven't, I don't know, they always charge what it costs to make and a small profit margin, and they kept doing that when other brands have gone up exponentially around them.
A lot of brands have decided that they're now luxury brands.
Right.
And so they put a luxury...
luxury tax.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. I've seen products double in price.
Yeah.
And I don't see a value in it. I see them trying to appeal to a super wealthy customer.
Yes.
But I think that there's a music lover that always goes out there looking for value.
Mm.
Because you can get so much more enjoyment out of something which is a value product that will...
I guess there's a segment of hi-fi buyers who are after a luxury product.
Of course,
but really the majority of music lovers who can afford a superior system are, of course, looking for value for money and a quality item. Which, of course, clearly. There are so few products now actually crafted in Japan and we know that they are fanatical about quality, so
it's one of the things as well. You know, these things unfortunately are finite because these are handcrafted.
Yes,
and I feel very,
at some
very
point they will not be able to make them anymore, will they?
And they won't have the next generation that wants to make them.
No. This is a concern, and there's a lot of people saying that. Well, I don't want to go off that tangent, but there's everyone I've spoken to so far at this show is concerned about where we're going with people with skills, hand skills, as much as anything else, and so anyone listening to the podcast who loves audio should, you know, get some electronic training into you from the internet. There's tons of it out there, and buy a soldering iron and start getting into it. So
I think there's a whole another podcast in that.
There possibly is.
Yeah.
You've also got Fisher & Fisher loudspeakers. They're quite a nicely proportioned floor stander from Germany, but they have a couple of unique features. Well, one in particular, What's the cabinet made out of?
It's made out of slate.
Made out of slate. So you could, when you're tired of them, you could turn them into flooring.
So they were rescued from being flooring.
Oh, is that right? Okay, so that gag fell flat. Really? Is that right?
So what happens is Brands Fischer and Fischer, the Fischer family, own a slate mine in Germany under a mountain.
Under a mountain,
in a place called Schmallenberg.
Schmallenberg.
And what happens is that they make roofing tiles and floor slabs.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the best pieces they cut out and keep to make speakers.
Wow, okay.
And the speaker's an inch thick.
Is that right?
There's no bracing or anything inside it. It's just the slate. It's beautifully beveled. If anyone comes past and has a look at them, the seam on them is perfect.
Well, they probably have some fancy machinery, I'm guessing.
They certainly do, yes.
So do they make like bench tops and stuff in-house or something as well? So they've got some great machining equipment.
They do, yeah.
Some German-made CNC machining.
But I think the really interesting thing about slate is to explain what slate is, because it's not stone.
Okay, well, you better tell me about that, because I'm foolishly thinking... it's weirdly stiff and light, isn't it, kind of, compared with rock? Is that part of it?
I think,
or is it not that light? Tell me about it.
Well, it's 85 kilos each for this pair of speakers.
Okay, so these speakers are not light. 85 kilos a piece.
And I've taken them everywhere. I've taken them to Geelong. I've taken them to Bayswater in Victoria.
So this is everywhere. Bayswater and Geelong.
I've brought them here. I took them to the Melbourne Hi-Fi show.
Yeah, okay.
People say, can I hear them? And I put them in my car and off we go.
That's, what do you drive, a Dodge Ram? I mean, you put 170 kilos in the boot of the car.
I've got the best car ever for this industry. I've got a long wheelbase Caddy.
Ah, the Caddy. Yeah, it is the best car. Yes.
For this, it drives like a car.
It does.
I've actually managed to do everything that is said in the Dire Straits song.
Okay.
I've done refrigerators.
No. Oh, yes.
Microwave ovens.
TVs
and a custom kitchen. The kitchen
that I often kitchen.
That went in my Caddy.
Yeah, right. That's very cool. Yeah, yeah, no, I had a Caddy for many years, and it was super reliable, very capable. We used to call it the florist delivery van. We never delivered flowers in it, but it was kind of, a lot of people use it for that as
they
well.
Do,
but,
and painters use them as well.
Yeah, and I also used to drive it around a racetrack and put my motorbike in the back as well. So it's surprising what you can fit in there. I think you had to take the mirrors off, obviously, but it wasn't that high. But they're a very versatile machine. But yeah, handle well enough to chuck it around lakeside on two wheels. It was the long wheelbase one, maybe not so good. But
putting a pair of Fischer and Fischers in one side would help you to do that.
Well, if you were speedway racing, yes. Going only one way. But they're back to speakers. So slate, and they had a ready access to slate. But what's its acoustic properties?
The acoustic properties are that it's actually made out of layers of silt, and sedimentary rock,
which is crushed over time, like.
Yeah,
so if you left slate there long enough, it would turn into big sheets of diamond.
Possibly.
No. So silt that's... So does that mean it comes... Is that why it comes out in quite neat layers or...
Yes.
Yeah,
okay. And it is layers, and that's the magic of it.
Yeah, right.
Unlike stone, unlike so many other materials that people use outside of MDF, this works like an a resonant-free box.
Yes.
So each one of those layers is a different density, and it keeps the sound.
Oh, wow!
The box.
So it's like it's not so much a constrained layer, but sound doesn't pass very nicely through, as you're alluding to, through different media. If you layer different media that has different densities, it obviously attenuates different. And I'm not a scientist, but it does. We know it works.
It does. I mean,
it's the basis of good acoustic room design, is you could use different materials, layer them up, particularly if you put a constrained layer between them. But is that what they've done though? They don't put a glue in between two layers. They don't need to.
It's just a single. But the property is within the 500 million years.
Mm-hmm.
I checked that as well. It's like, sure, it's 500 million years. No,
half a billion years. So these speakers have been a long time in the making.
Yeah. And the other great thing is you look at some of the MDF, high gloss finished or vinyl finished, or they're not going to last a lifetime.
Well, no, they're not. No, and in fact, this okay. So this is an interesting feature, isn't it?
That it's half a billion years half life.
Exactly. Yeah. So so they will, as far as the exterior finish, it will simply not change ever.
No.
Yes.
Yeah, I've got a pair of 270s. This is a pair of 470s.
Okay.
Customs opened the box.
Yeah.
Because they couldn't believe that these things were slate speakers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they used a knife, and they've actually cut into the slate.
That's great of them to do that for you. Wow.
There's a wax you just put over it and they're perfect. I can't even see where they were cut.
Yeah, okay.
So they'll last, in terms of their finish, they'll last forever.
Look, they sound great too. I mean, they seem to have a pretty serious complement of drive units on the front. There's a ribbon of some description.
It's a Mungdorf AMT, air motion
transducer. Okay, so it's not a ribbon, okay.
Yeah.
So it's a serious tweeter drive unit.
And what it does is it actually moves like an accordion.
Yeah, pleated sort of thing. Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
as a result of that, you never get a harshness, you never get muddled sounds. I've played some loud, complex tracks on them.
Yes.
And I hear every note. Yeah. But it doesn't homogenise.
Yeah, there's a real pace and a clarity to them. The horns that were playing before off the Helix through that beautiful tube amplifier sounded incredibly realistic for a loudspeaker that's not outrageously expensive, is it?
It's not outrageously expensive. No. Somebody compared them in his room to a pair of speakers worth three times as much, did a whole YouTube series on them.
Yeah.
He was looking for things to be able to say, well, you know, the speakers that I've bought are worth this much.
Mm.
But this thing here, a third of the value of it.
Yes.
Just performed beautifully. I heard both speakers in his room.
Yeah, okay.
Just putting these in place, they sounded amazing.
Yeah. Okay. No, they're, clearly built to typically sort of Germanic standards of excellence. So I guess the build quality is amazing. I guess WBT terminals on the back, or I shouldn't say that without checking first.
They're actually not.
Okay.
But the whole simple crossover is all Mungdorf capacitors.
Okay.
The whole thing.
Beautifully wired. No corners cut.
Oh, okay. And I kind of think it's because they own the material. So you look at something like, I'm not going to mention any names, but some of these companies, they go to great efforts to buy the material, maybe then have to shape it and all the rest of it to try and create a speaker, which most of them are made out of MDF, where so much of the sound pressure is lost out of the box.
Mm.
These guys here, they own the material, so all they need to do is build the drivers.
Yeah.
And the plate, which is 3 millimetres of aluminium, which the drivers are screwed into.
Yes.
Perfectly through the slate.
Yes.
And it's just, they just don't move.
Yeah,
it's just a pistonic movement of the drivers.
Well, I mean, there's a couple of different ways you can go with the loudspeaker design. You can make it really light and sort of can't absorb energy, or you can just go the other way and get somewhere in the middle, of course, which is most MDF boxes, and try to brace it or do something. But, and everyone's got their own idea. And this birch ply, of course, we know it has some advantages. But then this is the massive approach, but from a natural material that has some very positive natural features, if you like, in its characteristics, and clearly it works. So, they're worth a listen. I mean, now, this podcast is, as I've mentioned in every segment, so people are sick of hearing that it's actually up after the show, but, I mean, I guess you'll be at the Melbourne show.
Yeah, and people can make a time anytime.
Yeah, yeah, you drop into your store.
Yeah.
Preferably make an appointment.
Always make an appointment.
Yeah, but obligation free, of course.
Absolutely.
Just come and have a listen to them.
Yeah.
amazed.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
And for that matter, you've got offices full of other juicy goods. You've also got, actually, just to round out the wrap up of the system, very nice looking rack, but also
AG Lifter from New Zealand.
Okay, so that's a serious piece of equipment. Yeah,
yeah.
All right. Yep. Beautifully made, beautiful looking in a slightly Swiss Germanic kind of way as well. Really, it's got some. It's a bit massive looking, but it's quite stunning. But this Sutherland, is it Sutherland?
Yeah, Sutherland.
Phono preamp.
Transimpedance.
Transimpedance. Tell us about that briefly. It's very fashionable at the moment.
Yeah. Basically, it just means that you don't need to worry about setting all of your impedances.
Oh, so if you've got a moving coil cartridges, you just, cartridge, you just plug cartridges it in. Perhaps, if you've got
maybe
a dual arm turntable.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah. Yes.
So you just plug it in, you just works
just
it all out.
It again, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. All
very,
right.
Very simple. Sounds beautiful, warm, rich, yeah. And cuts out all the noise.
Okay.
So we had a instance where we were using a traditional expensive preamp in a person's home.
Yes.
Little did we know when we were going out to install this very, very expensive turntable that there was a radio tower very nearby.
Oh, okay.
And so I went out with Mark Diamond and we had to wrap some alfoil around the cables and stuff, which did not look very nice.
No.
And the next, about a couple of days later, we took out a Sutherland Little Loco.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect.
Fixed okay.
All of the issues.
All right.
Guy was so happy he ended up buying a big loco, which was one of 16 that was slated to be made. They were going to be made for America only.
Yeah, yeah.
And he contacted Sutherland, mm-hmm. Ron Sutherland, and said, can you make me one? And he goes, yep, I'll have it to you in 4 weeks.
Okay, all right.
It was 30 grand.
Serious piece of equipment.
That's what I took to the last Hi-Fi show in Melbourne.
That actual one.
Yeah, the client lent it to us for the weekend.
Wow, okay. And that, so Sutherland is made, excuse my ignorance, but...
In Kansas, America, handmade.
In Kansas, yeah. Okay, wow. Cool. It looks beautifully crafted as well, and as it should be at
and
that approximate price.
And I've taken the lid off as well, so you can
yeah,
see the
so
beautiful
I know how,
engineering.
How very nice it is inside.
It's just
yeah.
perfect, isn't it? Yeah.
It is. And so the and to round out the last piece that I can see that and we'll move on and let you get back to finishing your setup of the room is the Meitner streamer.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a interesting looking piece as well.
Yeah, Canadian. It's a very, very good DAC. It's called an MA3. The DAC on it,
mm-hmm.
as just a DAC, and I've had people buy it just as a DAC.
Yeah, okay.
Sounds really, really musical. Ed Meitner is one of the architects of DSD DAC technology when it
mm-hmm.
first came out.
Yeah, okay.
And so everything on that is proprietary Meitner.
Is that right?
Yeah. Doesn't use other people's little chipsets and stuff. It is his own DAC.
Okay, that's something.
Yeah.
Yeah, right, yeah.
So his standalone DACs are like $60,000.
Okay.
This thing here is 24 with a streamer.
Is it really?
Yeah, and he's put his own, he's put Meitner on it instead of EMM Labs.
Yeah, right, yeah. So EMM Labs, yeah, that rings a bell.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, all right.
And when it's often when I'm playing a different streamer in the shop.
Yeah.
I know, straight off. It's
yep.
like, there is something missing.
Yeah, okay.
Because this is pretty much the system I run every day. This
that's a kind of surprisingly affordable piece, considering how special it is. What? Yeah, so of course you're kind of used, you've developed a taste.
I have, yes.
How the hell do you go back to something ordinary?
That's very difficult.
Yeah.
I'd normally run an old 1980s Lin LP12 at home. And I took,
nothing wrong with that.
No, and I took home a German turntable, which is new. It should have been absolutely perfect. It's got a really nice arm. It's got a better cartridge on it than my Lin.
Yes.
I turned to Danica and said, there is a problem with this. There's something wrong. It was too clear, too clinical. Not what I was used to.
See, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is the problem, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So new turntables.
Yeah. Oh, I think all of this...
Not all of them, of course,
but... I was going to say, all of this sound is very subjective. Though,
of course.
And that's obviously...
But you enjoy the musicality of the Lin, right?
Yeah, I do.
And the lack of... Well, to some degree, the lack of hi-fi-ness, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
And then you brought home a hi-fi turntable.
I did, yeah.
Yeah, and it didn't work for you.
No. So the next thing I'm going to take home is an Origin Live.
I just bought
some for the shop.
Yeah, rightio.
I'm a dealer. I've been dealing with them for the last 6 months.
Yeah, rightio.
It's been really nice and successful for me. And
yeah,
so
okay.
I've got a couple of demo models that are coming in.
Yeah, rightio. Who brings Origin Live in?
I do.
Oh, okay.
You have to buy them directly from Origin Live.
Yeah, rightio.
Yeah.
Oh, good on you. Okay,
yeah.
Cool.
And so,
good stuff. Okay, so if people are interested in Origin Live, you've got that as well.
Yeah. I've actually, since the last Hi-Fi show, I've actually really developed my place in analog.
Mm-hmm.
This beautiful diamond has obviously helped it. And then people are contacting me for much more...
record related.
Exactly. And I've got Tony, who's with me at the show.
Yes.
He's my person to set up turntables.
Okay.
If someone wants to hear a Doman in Melbourne or anywhere, actually,
yeah.
Mark will accompany me.
Yes.
We'll set it up and let them have a listen to it in their home.
It's a pretty amazing service, really. You get the designer of the turntable to come out.
I know, yeah.
Well, that's the joy of buying local, isn't it?
You know? Well, exactly, yeah.
Yeah, that's, and then, mind you, I have a suspicion that Mark happily travels the world to set his turntable.
He does, yes. And why wouldn't you? You know, you walk into a house with a product with your name on it, and all of his wealth of knowledge
and
stories.
He is literally living the dream, isn't he?
He is, absolutely. And then here I've got Mark Busby, who will work with me in my my Sydney setups, because obviously the reason why I'm here is I'm not here to encroach on Sydney market.
No.
I've got exclusive products which...
They're not sold in Sydney.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and I figure I've worked with so many people in Sydney for all these years.
Mm.
The least I can do is to get in my car and come up if there's a hi-fi show.
Yeah.
So more than happy to say hi to everyone, shake their hand and thank them for their custom.
Yeah, no. Well, that's great. Thank you, Jeff. And thank you for your time. Great system. Very interesting components. And you know, I mean, within... Yeah, depending on your attitude. I would say surprisingly affordable, but it's still expensive equipment. But it does deliver the goods, and it's beautiful quality. And clearly these are pieces you keep for a lifetime if you choose to.
Absolutely. We work in...
Or upgrade 3 months later.
Well, less.
I mean, I guess you do trade-ins, right?
I do trade-ins, yeah.
Well, that's the way to do it.
And it's all about evolving a system. So just because you bought something today doesn't mean that that's the thing you want to live with forever.
No.
But having the ability to trade back in with the person who... started your or was part of your journey is so important, because why would you want to try and sell it to someone else? You know, you may get the perception of getting a better deal if you sell it yourself, but you know, the convenience, the ease, and
the
somebody just guiding you through it's so much easier.
And you don't have to one-stop shop, and you don't have to deal with, you know, people that answer random ads. All right. Thank you again, Jeff.
Thanks,
and we will speak to you another time.
Brilliant.
And of course, we'll keep running your ads.
Thank you. We might try and change the next one.
Indeed, yes. Due for change. I keep running into you and discussing the same thing week
They're
after week.
They're wonderful products. People should be buying these Lindemans.
Well, you've probably run out of Lindemans now, so we'll...
I found another stack.
You found another stack.
Okay. I did, yeah. Okay. German, well, very, very well built.
Indeed, yeah. They won't go off. All right. Thanks, we're over and out, and we'll be back.
Brilliant.
Okay, see you.
Thank you.
Bye.
I was chatting with Jeff at Hey Now Hi-Fi this week. And I asked him, you know, what was happening in the store. He said he had a cool bargain, really cool, that the Not An Audiophile listeners might find interesting. Lindemann Lime Tree Hi-Fi Essentials, German-made, compact, high-end, discrete components that enhance any hi-fi system. He has a music streamer with a DAC, and a phono preamplifier, all on special. Why don't you head to heynowhifi.com.au and search Lime Tree.
What is it? The Australian Hi-Fi Show?
Yes.
The Sydney Hi-Fi Show? Is it the Sound and Image?
It's the Australian Sydney Hi-Fi Show.
Yes. It's somewhat confusing. We're here with Jean-Marie Lier in the Microphase Audio
Design
Room. Mad, of course. Completely mad. We've come to see Jean-Marie because he has some rather unusual looking loudspeakers, some would say. But in reality, as I'm sitting before... an original pair that he manufactured in 1985 that sound amazing. He's really continuing on, really, from where you started in France.
Yeah, that's right. And so that adventure lasted about, I don't know, 4 or 5 years probably.
Okay. Yeah.
We had good distribution all around Europe, primarily in Belgium and Germany, where we were selling only the Actives version of them.
Okay, yeah.
And then in Scandinavia...
So you had an Active version in 1985?
Yes.
Okay, all right.
We do have a new version as well now with the Class D amplifier.
Yes.
But at the time it was a beautifully designed Class A amplifier.
Class A?
Yeah. Made by one of my dealers in Strasbourg.
Okay.
And I've never heard it. It was a complete mess inside.
Okay.
But it sounded amazing. And then my German distributor said, oh, I can't sell that. And so we redesigned it, you know, on a PC board. And so we lost some of the magic, but obviously it was more manufacturable.
Yes. Oh, so originally it was some kind of point-to-point wired sort of extravaganza or something.
Yeah, well, I don't know why, because... At the time, there was, you know, I had a vinyl plant not far, studio. It was all the beginning of the free radios, you know. So there was a lot of activities, a lot of new studios that needed small monitors.
Yes.
And these ones, the professional one, wanted to get an active version, yes, obviously. Yeah. So we that's how we started. The pinnacle of that. Is that the right word? Yes.
Well, we say pinnacle.
Pinnacle, yeah. Of that was that we equipped the wall of the Norwegian radio with 100 pair of them.
Wow.
And some are still working.
Wow, okay, that's amazing. So, in fact, your manufacturing adventure in the mid-80s was of some scale. So, but at some point you moved to Australia.
Yes, and, 1997.
So you've been here a while. Okay. Yeah. So you're almost a local. I mean, you sort of really are. And so, as much as you go back to Europe quite regularly, of course, to get a taste of,
Yeah, oysters primarily.
What are you saying? Australian oysters are no good?
I didn't say that.
You need to try Kiwi oysters. Yeah. It's one thing they do well. They do many things well. Sorry, our New Zealand friends. The mussels are also good. So back to speakers. So you've got quite an array here, and what I also notice, and it's disappointing that we're speaking historically in a way, because this podcast goes out after the show.
Yeah.
So it's more of a show roundup than a show preliminary, yes, sort of teaser. But you've got quite an array of sort of, it's not vintage gear as such, except perhaps the Stellavox. Little open reel tape recorder.
Yeah.
Which is, I guess, is it the French version of an Agra?
No. It's also a Swiss product.
Oh, it's also Swiss?
Yeah.
I thought heritage that you had.
No, it's but again, there is a big French connection.
Shown also, my ignorance, yeah. Yes. There is a French connection.
Yes, there's two French connections, actually. One is, first of all, the Stellavox SP7, I think, was the real one, production one, in 1973, if I remember properly, was the first professional portable stereo recorder.
Okay.
At the time, Nagra was only doing mono because the film industry was still in mono.
And yes.
It took them like 4 years to compete properly with Stellavox with the Nagra 4S.
Okay. All right.
The Stellavox has the advantage of having a much simpler circuitry.
Yes.
There's only 4 transistors between the mic input to the recording head.
Is that right?
Where the Nagra has 20.
I also reckon at a glance that the Stellavox is more diminutive. It's lighter.
Yeah. It's slightly smaller and lighter.
Yeah.
It's only 4.5 kilos.
Yeah. And we're talking about, of course, portable tape recorder as it was in the early 70s, yeah, mid-70s. It was not a cassette recorder. It was a open reel, what size reel? 5 1/4? 5 1/2? What's the size of the, just 5-inch reels? What do you call it? Bigger reels on
Yeah,
it,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. I have an adapter, but one of our belts decided to break
before the show. It's got a little outrigger arm.
Yeah. I'm just waiting for new belts to someone in Holland is making them for me. So the first big French connection is I was working for the distributor.
Oh, okay.
Conveniently. For a year or so, whatever. And there's actually 3 connections. The second connection is that we sold about half of the production in France.
Yeah, okay.
To the French radio and television because they were all going stereo at the time.
Yes.
So my boss made a killing. I did buy a unit at that time, which I sold,
of course,
later, because as people, you're young and you say, okay, well, I need the money, so I'm going to sell it.
That's right.
But it gave me a taste for, there's 2 things there. That was my first foray into the audio professional industry, because we were selling Otari and very fancy mixing console from Italy that was competing with Navy. It was good stuff. And also the very first Electret microphones, which the current anti range of Rode are actually not copied, but you know, modern version of the same thing. Pencil. So I bought two of them as well. And I started to make recordings, because at the time you could just walk up to a venue and put your two microphones there and then say, oh, can I record? And they would say, yes, okay. Okay. So that gave me a taste for that. But it's not until another 10 years that I really started to design speakers with the view of selling them, you know.
Okay.
The third connection is that the motor, which is made by Aton, AATON, it's a company in the Jura part of France, which is famous for all the watchmaking. So it's the French equivalent of Saint-Imier. So that motor was originally designed for Beaulieu for a film camera.
Yes.
Okay. And then it was adapted by George Kelly, the owner of Stellavox, together with Aton to make it work into a portable reel-to-reel recorder.
I can see. I mean, so that's why the machine's here. I mean, there's a very strong love and connection to the brand and to the idea of what Open Reel Tape can bring. Beautiful analog recordings, which I believe you've been doing some. But but slipping sideways into the speakers, your philosophy, I guess, around
design principles
is that you're after pace and speed and lightness, and it's sort of it's slew rate you like to talk about.
It's a term that used to be employed for amplifiers.
I was going to say it is more of an amplifier term.
But I believe it applies to any piece of electronics, really.
I guess it kind of does. And for those that are listening who are not quite sure what a slew might be and at what rate it might happen,
if you input a square signal into a piece of gear, okay, regardless of what it is, then the time it takes to go from zero to, let's say, 10 volt or whatever it is, that's the speed, and that speed is the slew rate, okay?
And literally how square the square wave can be reproduced.
Yeah, because, you know, you can't see obviously what I'm showing to Andrew, but that's mean when the amplifier or the speaker get into the way, the front edge of the square wave just get it slanted a little bit.
Yes,
so it's the slew.
Exactly.
And so nobody ever measured the slew rate of the loudspeakers. We do make impulse measurements, which is about the same, but we don't transform that into a number which would be the slew rate. I think, again, we need to anchor microphase into the history of French hi-fi. I started to be interested when I first listened to a pair of Ellipson.
Okay.
They were professional monitors, basically, at a trade show, hi-fi show in Paris, way back in the 70s.
When you were only about 50.
I was very... It's a long time. Anyway, and at the time I was doing I was at uni learning electronics. So, it was a kind of an interest. And then, we had a Huer portable recorder there to do some stuff. I mean, there was a lot of stuff happening at that time, in that period of life. And
The 70s and into the 80s was an incredible era of transformation and improvement.
Innovation and improvements, genuine improvements.
Big steps in performance from say 1968 to 1978 was quite astounding. And then into the mid 80s, really. So you sort of rode that wave.
Yeah, until the mid 90s, where it started to become, ordinary.
It was all done.
Yes.
Basically, the development had occurred.
We had
achieved nirvana. I don't know, and of course at some point in the mid-90s there was this interest in how can we make things sound worse, but cheaper.
So what a number of people like me, or is that another Jean-Marie Reynaud that you probably don't know about, he's no longer alive, but his son has taken over. There was Cabas, and there was Triangle. All these people, if you look at the design we were all doing at the time, we were all trying to do a smaller or less difficult to manufacture than the Ellipson system with the sphere and the big subwoofer. So if you look at the Quatron Taurus here that I'm trying to sell, okay, that's basically a baby version of a 4040 from Ellipson. You know?
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
And obviously much much easier to make and cheaper too, you know?
Yes.
And I mean, to a degree, but if you look at some products from Cabas and then BMW, okay, you'll see they all copy the Ellipson thing.
Okay? Not the Ellipson,
and so I was not very original in that research.
Fact,
you know, I was just trying to. The idea of this, because from 1984, is that.
And these speakers from 1984 are tiny. They're literally half a shoebox.
Because the drive, the idea, I had another colleague in at HP. I was working for Hewlett Packard at the time, so that helped as well with the measurement.
I was going to say yes. You have because you were working for HP. You had access to at the time test equipment that was simply unaffordable, except to the likes of Ellipson and say Bowers & Wilkins.
Yeah, so I could borrow them for a weekend at no cost.
I mean, these were instruments that were $5,000 and $10,000.
US the HP 3582, which was the very first FFT analyzer that anyone could afford, was still $25,000.
$25,000 when you could buy a very nice house.
And that's in 1982.
Yes.
Okay. So KEF was the first audio company buying the bigger one.
Yes.
Which
yes.
was like, you know, 250,000.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So in the early 80s, KEF bought $250,000 machine.
Yeah, yeah. And that's Siegfried Linkwitz, that you obviously know, most people would know, was the guy at HP that sold the system to KEF.
Oh, was he?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Wow. It's a small world, the audio world, isn't it? Wow.
And so, the design philosophy between that speakers is that Pierre and I decided to find the smallest drivers that we could find that would still work to our satisfaction.
Yes.
And put them in the smallest possible box.
Yes.
And because on the side we were building Onkyo enclosures for for you know with Jean Iraga and all that French crowd, French Japanese crowd. Anyway, so diverse. So that's how we came with the idea of the slanted baffle, because that was giving us
a little bit of time alignment.
Alignment. Yes. It was not too difficult to make. You have to understand that these things were made manually. There was no CNC machine at the time. And so, if we continue in the history, so by the time I had, you know, got married,
you off for a second, I mean, you're implying that modern manufacturing techniques for speaker enclosures are less than hand assembled. They're all hand assembled, really.
Yeah.
I mean, the pieces are cut with a machine, but the rest is absolutely. You know,
The assembly is still manual. Yeah.
Whether it's made
and tape and
China, Russia, Estonia,
UK
or Australia or America, don't make anything there anymore, but I'm sure there's someone who's trying to change that. They're all ultimately beautifully precision cut by machine, but still have to be.
Yeah, but obviously the fact that you were cutting them on a bench saw.
Yeah, it's a little bit of fettling to get it to fit up.
I did a little bit of, you know, variations.
A bit of fudging to, a bit like Jaguars of the 70s. Everyone was different,
So, so then, you know, I moved to Australia, educated to kids that are now young adults and successful and happy. I know why, because it's true. About 2015, I was working with a lighting company.
Yes.
And they were doing extrusions for LEDs and stuff.
Okay.
And we had a project with the Scott College here in Sydney.
Okay.
Where they need 94 meters of that extrusion with lighting, but all the other services, so it was perforated for the sprinklers, also speakers for PA and speakers for EWIS, the emergency speakers.
Yes, indeed.
Okay. So because the lighting company that I was working with knew that I was capable of designing speakers, they tasked me with idea of making tiny little speakers with, I should have bought some actually, but anyway. So the cutout frequency on the bass is probably 200 hertz.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But as a PA system, it's more than enough.
Yeah, you know?
And for EWI system, it doesn't really matter. So we did that. I made quite a good piece of money out of that. And I said, okay, well, I'm, you know, that's extra money that I really don't need.
It's good not to need money, isn't
it? Yeah. Well, because I was doing also things that were working well. So I decided, I was like, well, let's use, you know, 10 or 20% of that money, all of it,
no,
to design a modern version of those
speakers. Of the original,
And that's how the SAT and Mark II came about, which is the top of the towers here. I didn't bring one because I don't want to sell them. I mean, I can't make them anymore. But that's also where the idea of the Mark III came about, because that was the first satellite into which we put a back drive, an active, active as in not passive.
An extra driver in the rear baffle.
That's a driven
drive. I'm not quite sure how that works, and unfortunately time will defeat us as far as explaining the technicalities of that. But the bottom line is you have like a 4-inch driver in the front, or is it 5 1/4?
Well, this one is at the time it was the 10 centimeter, I mean the 11 centimeters.
So 11 centimeter, which I guess we generically refer to.
We have now in the Mark
One. It's actually more of a 3.5-inch driver, isn't it? But anyhow, so it's a small drive unit. Then you have a larger mid-bass drive unit in the rear bar. And obviously some kind of crossover arrangement between them. It's not as if they're driven in parallel, are they? Or are they?
Well, basically the front driver is not filtered at the bottom.
So it's like a 2.5 way.
Kind of, yes. Yeah. And then
but
the back
same
one
enclosure.
Is cut at, you know, 300 hertz or
whatever.
Okay.
It's 2.5 way. But it's interesting.
Also because they are, like, you know, we use that term isobaric loosely, but basically because the two drivers share the same volume, each driver sees the whole volume of the box. So it looks like you have a small speaker that is twice the size of
roughly, it's one of those things, I guess, it's very hard to predict in any kind of software. You really have to build it and try
it. So we were lucky because I think one reason why it works and what we could achieve the Mark III as well is one thing that I found, you know, by trial and error and by chance as well, is that if the resonant frequencies of the two drivers are the same or very close, that way it works.
If
you had a 40 hertz on one side and a 60 hertz on the other side, it would go all over the place.
Haywire. I'm going to keep it because we've got a lot of guests on this show. This episode's going to run for hours. But I really appreciate your time. You have so many interesting stories, and of course, I mean,
decades of stories.
Well, there is decades of stories. There are many stories. We've touched on it. But the bottom line is Jean-Marie's loudspeakers are really easy to recognise because they are built from birch ply. They are clear stain, or clear lacquered, really. It's a terrible expression, clear stain, because they're not stained, in the normal sense. They are simply sealed and present in their kind of in a finished raw state, I guess. And they're tall and skinny, and they're very fast, and they're very... There is something quite... there's something about the way they sound that, that many other loudspeakers don't quite sound the same. And if you like, which is easy to like, that kind of lively, exciting way about them, then you should have a listen. I guess you're at other shows.
We can announce today that we will be at the Melbourne show August.
All right.
We have now a listening room in Melbourne called Groove Audio.
Yes.
So it's going to be more active from July.
Okay.
And in Sydney, it's at my place until we found someone else.
Yes. And then the thing is for our European listeners.
So I have a listening room in Kent in the UK called Val iFi.
Okay.
And then someone in Paris or near Paris and near Beauvais who is... a man of a gentilhomme, as we call him. I mean, he's a musical encyclopedia.
Okay.
In his head and also physically, because he has, I don't know, 4,000 CDs and I don't know how many vinyls.
Okay.
And just to give you a taste, he has 48 versions of the Four Seasons. And
48?
You know that,
did you say 48?
48, yes, on CD. So I'm sure he has more on vinyl.
I mean, it's a wonderful piece of music. 48 yeah. versions may be a stretch.
Yes.
And any other agents?
So at the moment, I can't confirm. We were working with Jean-Jacques in Beauvais to appoint someone in Belgium.
Okay.
And someone downtown Paris as well.
No, oh, okay. All right. Well,
but this is a, infancy.
So an international brand.
Yeah.
You manufacture locally, export everywhere, and you can hear them in all sorts of places. Thanks, Jean-Marie. Thanks for insight into
Thanks
the product.
Thanks for stopping by.
And a pleasure. Not a pleasure. Did I say not a pleasure? It was not a pleasure at all. It was an absolute pleasure, as always, and I'll see you in Melbourne.
Okay.
Thanks
no
again.
Problem.
Great. Bye.
Thank you. Thanks, Andrew.
Sirhan Swift. Bespoke loudspeakers designed and built in Australia by perfectionists. Described by reviewers as exceptional, Sirhan Swift has received numerous awards here and abroad, including Sound and Image, Best Stand Mount Loudspeaker 2024. For full information, head to sirhanswift.com. If you've enjoyed the show, and you must have because you made it this far, can you please perhaps give us a 5-star review, if that's what they call it, on the platform that you prefer. So thanks again for listening. See you in the next episode.